Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. Joined today by special guest, Cubs historian and columnist for The Athletic, John Greenberg. John, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's happening?
Did you talk to Ed Hardig for your piece on the 03 Cubs?
No, I left him alone to deal with Jordan Bastian's many questions of when's the last time the Cubs have been, you know, had like this many hits and this many innings. Yeah. So, no, I kind of just, you know, started contacting guys and just kind of did it all on my own. Really bootstrapped it.
You worked on it for a long time, right? Like, started at, like, the Cubs convention time and then worked on it?
No, I kind of came up with it, like, around spring training.
Okay.
So I think I started talking to guys, like, after the season had started. I started with, like, probably, like, Blandville or something. You know, someone super easy to get in touch with. And then I looked at the schedule and saw that, like, Pryor and Dusty – weren't really in town much. They were in town really early in the season. And that would be the only time I could really get them. So I got Dusty. He gets asked this everywhere he goes. You know, people want time with him because, you know, just listen to Dusty talk. So it actually was some finagling to get it. And it was kind of wasn't the best interview in the world because he's all over the place, you know. I mean, Dusty answer, you can ask Dusty anything, you have no idea what he's going to answer because his mind is 17 different places. Pryor was interesting because I went up to him and like the PR guy had mentioned it and he said he'd be willing to do it, and I went up to him in the clubhouse and he was like, hey, how about tomorrow at like 10 or something? I'm like, yeah, it's great. So I come back, but then I remember the clubhouse didn't open till like 10:45. And so I texted the PR guy, like, you know, is he just going to want to meet in like the dugout or something? So I just went and waited in the dugout, never heard back. Go in the clubhouse when it opens, and Pryor's like, where were you? I'm kind of annoyed. And I was like, well, messaged the guy, it wasn't open. And everyone felt really bad, and Pryor actually called me like a day or two later from Pittsburgh and talked to me for like an hour.
Wow.
And he was like, wow, this is so much better than we would have been so rushed. This is really great. And he was like, so could not have been like more open to talking. And that, so that was like in April or May, and it went on really. I think the last person I talked to was funny enough, Kerry Wood, who like has nothing else to do and is like works here, but it just took forever to get a hold of him. And then he was great. He was so good and like really funny. Yeah. And like everyone was just, you know, people were like, I never got in touch with Alou. I never got in touch with Alex Gonzalez. I think Alou was, I remember he talked to Caps saying his 2013 documentary. And I think Caps said he basically like, because they had a relationship, he did it, but otherwise he didn't want to. Alex Gonzalez, I don't think would be like, oh, let me get to this. Let me get this.
Yeah. Ooh, good. I've been dying to talk about how Steve Bartman got me off the hook.
Bartman didn't want to talk.
No, but I see you got to quote his off-quoted statement.
Yeah, so you know what I did? I knew what his I guess a lot of Notre Dame alums use their Notre Dame alum email, which doesn't surprise me, so yeah, they can all like backslap each other. I shouldn't probably say this, but I found his email. I got his email, and I emailed him directly because I emailed Frank Murtha guy first. And he didn't get back to me because he's probably fucking tired of getting back to people after 20 years.
Yeah.
Of this thing. Hey, will Steve talk?
Is he finally ready to break his silence?
Yeah. So I sent him like a really like nice email. You know what I mean? Like I sent him links to stories I've written. You know, they're about sensitive subjects, things like that. Yeah. And, you know,
just sent him links to times you've been on this podcast.
Right, times I've been on this podcast. I sent him all the podcasts.
He's a big fan. I could have given you his. I could patch him in right now if you want.
He probably was a big fan.
Probably was.
Right? Like, you were like one of the first blogs of the Cubs.
Yeah.
You know, he probably was like, it'd be funny if he still is. But anyway, Murtha then got back to me and was like, Steve, you know, liked your stories. You know, obviously he's not going to talk, you know. And he's like, hey, how'd you get that email? I'm like, not replying to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would have been great. I offered him Barnaby's Pizza in Northbrook, which is a classic pizza place. Yeah. Hey, we'll go out to Barnaby's. I'm sure that was better than like the millions of dollars he's been offered to talk.
Yeah.
You know, the $12 Barnaby's Pizza was really, I thought, going to do it.
Was there anybody, well, I mean, I guess you mentioned you couldn't get Alou, you couldn't get Alex Gonzalez. Was there anybody that you, that surprised you couldn't get?
Oh, yeah. You know, it was a funny one I couldn't get. So I was talking to one of the guy who, Quick Rick Fuchs, who does the scoreboard. He's the guy that does the scoreboard up at Wrigley, balls and strikes guy. And I was talking about the story, and he's like, hey, I remember the carpenter's name who was building the stage.
Oh.
That they were going to do. And he had to get rid of it real quick. And I was like, that would be an awesome anecdote. And I got the guy's name and number. And I called him, and he called me back once. And then I kept calling him. He never called me back again. So that would have been like, is that a meaningful? It would have probably got cut. Yeah, probably. Unless he had some really great story about it. But I thought that would have been kind of funny. The guy who was building the stage. That's like real Jimmy Breslin stuff.
Yeah.
The guy building the stage. Because I remember, I didn't use it, but Estes said he went up in the dugout, in the clubhouse during the game and was like, thinking, man, this is up a little, is this up a little early? Like, you know, I know they do this, but like, he's like, I felt like it was a little early being built.
But it feels like you hear that story, and we heard it about the 86 Red Sox, and you've got that that stuff has to go up sometime. They can't
exactly,
wait until there's two outs in the ninth, and then they get caught hanging all the crap. Yeah,
right. That's like one of those things where people that like experiencing it feel it's early, but it's got to be done.
Yeah.
You can't just scramble to do it. I don't think anyone else I really couldn't get a hold of. The only person I think I probably that I contacted, there's two people I contacted and contacted me back. I never end up calling back. One was Bobby Hill, who is a small college baseball coach in California. And I realized it's just not going to be that important to talk to. And the other was Damian Miller, who I really should have talked to. But, like, he was camping or hunting or something.
Of course he was.
Right, something like that. And it was like, oh, let's talk next week. And then I just had so much done already. It's like, I just don't – I got enough Paul Bacco. I don't need Damian Miller.
You can't get enough Paul Bacco. Come on.
I mean, we talked for like forever. Paul Bacco, great conversation.
Wouldn't think Gabor's all that busy, so I'm sure he was willing to talk.
He was walking around New York City where both his kids live. Both his kids are kind of like bohemians in New York City. And he and his wife have a place. They live in, you know, whatever, Lafayette, Louisiana, wherever he's from. And they have a place in New York City too. So Paul Bacco is a little more cosmopolitan these days than the average ball player who just like lives in a tree stand.
Well, I mean, his name is Gabor, for God's sakes. Did you ask him about that? So, why is your name Gabor? How did you get that name? Why didn't you stick with it? Why did you want to be Pearl?
We were supposed to meet for coffee when he was here for Pearl Jam, but I was busy and couldn't end up calling him. That's when I talked to Kerry Wood, though, incidentally. It was in between the two Pearl Jam shows.
Yeah.
Because you knew he was going to both. Yeah, you knew he was going to both. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I was shocked he wasn't.
That's in his personal services contract with the Cubs. He has to attend all the Pearl Jam concerts and within the city limits.
I loved it. I had to use that line in my extra thing about Eddie Vedder. Oh, he was just like, yeah, Eddie was around a lot in 98. Not so much in 99 and 2000.
Yeah, and he was the, what do you say, he was the bat boy in 16? Or
he's the DH.
Yeah, the DH. He was DH in 16. How many times did Jim Hendry start answers to your questions with, don't print this, but?
A lot.
Yeah.
Many times, including one really, you know, I asked him.
He said, don't print it. He didn't say, don't talk about this on a podcast. He wouldn't be betraying anything.
Right. So there was, Dusty had told me, I listened to the audio again. I couldn't end up using this because Dusty, again, is
too much Miles. The Miles Davis in the background was too loud. He couldn't.
No, you know what was playing when we were talking? The Weights by the band.
Of course.
On his Alexa. And then you can hear the audio of him trying to get Alexa to stop. Alexa, stop. And then it's like, Alexa, stop. Very funny. So, but it was the Weight in the band. And I had that in an original story, like that, what that meant. But Dusty had said, like, after they lost, he went to a bar near his house, and that's where the Marlins victory party was. God. But, like, I couldn't get anyone from the Marlins to clarify that, where it was. And then I listened again to his tape, and it was kind of confusing what he said. Now, I think I know what bar it was, because I think it was a bar I used to go to right by where he lived in Eugenie Terrace, but I couldn't figure it out. But anyway, I asked Hendry what he did after the game, and that's where he told me, don't print this.
Yeah.
Don't print this story of how he dealt with it. Let's just say he was at the ballpark till like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
He was, he was pretty down. But, yeah, everyone I talked to was really great. I mean, for his bat, you know, and that was the point of the story in the oral history. You know, it was going to be a story, and then I made an oral history because I really wanted to include some of these people, you know, in their quotes, which still I handed in at like 11,000 words, and we cut it down to like under 5. So a lot got lost. But, you know, these guys, it was for them. I mean, and I think we remember it as, yeah, the ending was awful, but it was a great season. I mean, that was like really a sea change. And it was a sea change for the organization where like you kind of saw what was possible.
Yeah. Oh, I know. There's a 3-hour Remember This Crap podcast about the 03 Cubs. And it's a theme throughout is because it ended the way it ended. There's so many cool things that happened that year.
Yeah.
They're lost.
And that's what I wanted to do. You know? Right. The Farnsworth fight.
And you know, slamming Paul Wilson into oblivion. And there was ambulance on the field.
I forgot about that until Kara told me.
When Hesop cracked his head on the foul line. And that was Roger Clemens trying to win his 300th game, taking his uniform off between every half inning and putting it in a trunk because he was going to autograph them. I'm sure he did it when he finally won. He was going to autograph them all and sell them. What a guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, and I forgot about that till Karros told me. You know, Karros is the guy.
Yeah.
You know,
the only reason he's in the game to hit the homer is because ran into Kerry Wood and lost.
And like, Karros was, so that, I mean, that happened. You know, I didn't mention one of the funnier things that happened that year was Mariotti and Tellinger almost getting in a fight in the press box that year. It was during Cubs Sox. And like, that was a class. I just remember people telling me about it. Like, I missed it. Being like, oh man, you should have saw it. So that was I mean, there's just so much. You know, I didn't even put in there was Alfonseca's assault with a deadly belt with a deadly
That's
belly.
Right.
Yeah. Because it didn't. It was in September, and it didn't fit in like kind of the narrative. A lot of weird stuff happened in June and early July because it was Corey Patterson's injury, yes. Sosa, cork bat, and Farnsworth's fight were all within like a month. I feel like I put in the story. It was like bang, 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 and the Eric Karros, and the Clemens. So like all those things happened in that like early part of the summer, that really gave the season like this shit happens every day kind of feel.
Well, and that Yankee series ended, it was on Sunday Night Baseball the next night, and Charles Gibson got picked off first base to end the game. Then he had to go host Good Morning America. Wait, that was Charlie Gibson. That's a different guy.
But yeah, that was Yankees' first time there since the World Series, yeah. Right? So that was, I remember that in the city. I remember I lived above Stanley's at the time, just seeing Yankees fans like walking the streets everywhere, you know, and just that excited. But the Sosa cork bat thing, I think a lot of people probably forget that happened in 03. So and, you know, I had more, all this, those guys were like, I want to find out who has a cork bat still. They hinted at me, someone has.
Yeah, you said that. And bats just mysteriously disappeared out of Sammy's locker in an adjacent area. Right before the MLB could confiscate them all.
Right. It was mysterious how like someone just dumped took all the bats out. And the quotes from everyone, I wish I could just play the audio, are really funny. Just about like guys like, yeah, I don't know what happened to that. That's weird. Or Kerry Wood being like, weird, he only had one bat like
that. Right. Just what terrible luck that he somehow accidentally picked the one corked bat. That he only used for demonstration purposes in batting practice.
Carrie said that he said sometimes he and Karis will just text each other Sammy quotes.
Like, I can imagine. You know,
guys like you're just like us, they just text. He said we'll just be texting random like Sammy quotes to each other.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is funny, though, to read that and, like, Aramis literally talk about how coming to the Cubs, he felt like, watching Sammy work every day like changed his work ethic. You know, we think of Sammy now as, you know, well, blowing kisses to the camera and all that stuff. But there were clearly players, not guys like Kerry Wood and Eric Karras, but there were players who revered him. And, you know, 100%.
You know, I mean, Rama said it was him and Moises, and watching those two guys, you know, two Dominicans and just two vets that didn't take at bats off. Yeah. Like, you know, and that was kind of the criticism of Aramis in Pittsburgh, is that he wasn't always focused.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why Kerry Wood said both he and Estes were kind of like, yeah, he's good, but I've heard, like, you know, guys didn't like him or he takes stuff off. Yeah, Aramis was so – I was shocked I got him, kind of, because he is, you know, he was so happy to talk. I emailed his agent. Aramis called me within, like, an hour. Or I called him within an hour because he was, like, just overjoyed to talk about his time with the Cubs. It was, like, shocking almost.
It's ridiculous that he's underrated, but he's a really underrated, like, he shouldn't be an underrated Cub, right? I mean, we watched him for 12 years. He was one of their best players every year for 12 years. He was their best clutch player for a lot of that, but there are still people, and a lot of it, I think, is the constant criticism from Bob Brenly about lack of effort and all that stuff. When you find out it was, whether it was Lou or whoever the manager was at the time, Aramis is playing with a bad quad, and they just want him to hit. And they're like, if you don't run, don't run. And it's getting, you know.
It was cool just hearing what he, you know, all the stuff he said and like how much he loved Chicago. And he told me, I asked guys like, what did you do when the Cubs won? What were you doing? And it was, none of the stories were great or anything, but he said, he's like, I felt like I was on that team when they won. He was celebrating so much. He was so happy. Yeah. And so was Zambrano. Zambrano said he had like a guy like FaceTiming him from like outside of Wrigley, like a friend of his from here. So he could see people celebrating, you know, he was loving that. But yeah, you know, Cal Farnsworth said he loved Sosa. He said when he came up, Sosa was like really welcoming to him.
Yeah.
And he's like, a lot of guys didn't like him, but you know, like Kerry said, begrudgingly, all the winning the Cubs did, you know, while Sosa was here, he obviously had a big part of it.
And it just it makes the shunning just that much weirder still.
Well, and the players don't care. I really don't think like does Kerry would like kind of think he's a jack? What do you think he was probably a little bit of a jack? Yes, of course.
Kerry played like, for a long time. Sammy feels like a guy who, after a while, you'd just be like, really? Does it have to be this much all the time? But at the same time, how many games did Kerry win? Because Sammy hit two home runs and papered over Kerry's six walks. So
I think a lot of guys actually would like to see him. I think deep down, I think a lot of guys would. Now, did one guy off the record make fun of him a little bit? Yeah,
of course.
But guys, you know, I think Zambrano might have said he still talks to him a little bit. I don't think but Aramis is so excited to tell me that he and Moises have places next, beach houses next to each other. He's very proud of that.
It's maybe an unintentional, but probably an intentional flex that they have beach houses next to each other.
Yes.
Yeah, we know you made a lot of money, Aramis. We know that. I'm going to make a baseless prediction about Cubs convention announcement, and that's that the next two inductees into the Utility Tunnel Hall of Fame will be Derek Lee and Aramis Ramirez.
You think you're going to skip over Sosa?
Yeah. I don't think they have any intention of putting him in.
And this is the one to do it, because they told us they're doing it in like kind of chronological order now. Yeah. This would be the time. Is Kerry Wood in Utility Hall of Fame yet?
Oh, he's probably not. No. So yeah, he's got to go.
No,
and he can go in. They can put him in and still claim their, because he was.
It's got to be. It would have to be him and Sosa.
Yeah.
Right. That would have to be it. Him and Sosa.
And Paul Bacco.
You know who should go in the Utility Hall of Fame is Hendry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, think about those two deals. And I've talked about a ton, and it's not like a secret or anything. But, like, within a few months span, he traded for Aramis Ramirez and Derek Lee and gave away nothing.
Yes.
Yeah, those were great trades. Literally nothing for a first baseman and a third baseman who were franchise players.
Yep.
And he said he thinks the Derek Lee one was his best trade ever. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think him and Aramis are pretty much the same in WAR for the Cubs. One's bigger, one's a little more. Might be Aramis because he played longer.
Yeah.
Would have to be because he played longer.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. I think Aramis and Derek are destined to go into the Utility Tunnel together, but you're right. Maybe it's not this. Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's Wood. So, like, if it's not Sosa this time, it's never going to be. You know, he's never getting in the Utility Hall of Fame. Utility Tunnel Hall of Fame.
No. Oh, God. What a.
You got it.
What a stain on your resume. That's worse than being shunned to the big Hall of Fame. It's not to get in the Utility Tunnel Hall of Fame. That's what every Cub fan now, Cub player is playing for right now.
Yeah,
I'm sure when Pete Crow Armstrong got called up, he said, "This is my first step towards the Utility Tunnel Hall of Fame."
Well, everyone talks about the blue jacket.
Yes. You know, absolutely.
And if you wear that into the, the FanDuel or DraftKings sportsbook, whatever it is, then you get 20% off appetizers on Tuesdays.
Yes, on Tuesdays.
Before five.
That's right.
Before five. five to six.
Yeah, well, when you were talking about Hendry, may or may not have been, walking the haunted halls of Wrigley until 4 a.m. after Game 7, that's a guy whose entire legacy is completely different if they win that game. If he's the guy who built the team that finally got back to the World Series, because he was a good general manager. I think people are like, Jim Hendry, say he didn't. He had flaws like anybody else, but even, he'd been the farm director before he was the general manager. So he can even take credit for, I think he can take credit for Kerry. Maybe he can't. Certainly he can for Pryor.
Yeah.
Plus the guys, and then he built the 04 team, which was a better team, but had a multitude of, it couldn't get out of its own way.
Right.
And then he built those juggernauts in 07 and 08.
Right.
Actually, the 08 team was a good team. They just didn't have a playoff caliber pitching staff. They just didn't.
And
when they run a Dempster out there in game one, you don't have a chance.
Well, remember, they expected Fukudome to hit.
That's right.
And he forgot after, April. He was great in April.
But that's right. I mean, now, if he was playing now, we'd have Cub fans who were like, yes, but his... defensive runs saved in right field are so good that it completely makes up for the fact that he can't hit anything but a changeup.
He would corkscrew himself in the crowd and every breaking pitch. And like Dusty kind of said that too. And I ended up using the quote, but Dusty's like, he's like, think about how different it would be for Jim. He said he's never got another job, which is like an inaccurate quote because obviously he's got a good job. But what Dusty meant is he never got another GM job. Yeah. Dusty's like, I've gotten other jobs. Jim hasn't. Like, think about how different. And the fact that Jim doesn't think about it for him. He thinks about it for other guys. Like he goes, I use that quote. Think of how different their lives would have been if they would have been the guys. Yeah. And everyone said that. Like some guys legitimately said they were not like Estes and Karros and those guys who have no relationship with the Cubs were kind of like, nah, I really wasn't rooting for them that much because we're still pissed off, which I thought was like a very honest, and Bacco said it too. Like I thought it was a very honest quote instead of just bullshitting me.
Yeah.
Be like, no, yeah, I actually am still really bitter that we didn't get it done. Because Dusty said it too. He's like, I wanted to be the guy.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the manager that wins it. And like, yeah, you should.
Yeah, I mean, Dusty took the Cub job for three reasons. One was when he took the Giants to the World Series, and they're like, okay, we're good. Thanks, Dusty.
Yeah.
He kind of lived this. I think he only had 1 year off before he went to the Reds. He felt like, as an African-American manager, it's easy to get forgotten. So if you don't sit out a year unless you absolutely have to, you go get another job. So that was part of it. Part of it was he wanted to be the guy who won the World Series with the Cubs. The other part was he needed to pay the IRS because they had basically seized all of his assets.
Right. His brother had didn't file his taxes or something. Yeah. It was something like his brother screwed him out of something, I feel like. Dusty was he was the hot ticket.
Yeah.
Like, as Henry said, Henry's like, didn't do, we didn't spend any money because of it. Because the Tribune Company was whatever.
Yeah.
Think about what that year did for attendance, though. And the fact that, the next year, remember, you had to get – my buddy made me get this stupid wristband to get a number to be able to buy single-game tickets, even though it all went to, whatever, their scalping operation. But they sold out the season the first day.
Yeah.
04 was, the expectations had ratcheted up to, an uncomfortable degree.
Yeah, and even – there were some April games that were really weird. They had a game where they had blown the lead, and then Sammy and Moises went hit back-to-back homers, and Wrigley went nuts like they had just won the world. It was like it was game eight. And he goes, this is an April game against Pittsburgh. This does not matter. Although it did, because they only missed the playoffs by a game and a half. Maybe that's what the fans knew it was going to come down to the last day. We need this win, guys. Trust me, in September, you're going to remember this.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt like 03, ESPNs and whatever will just talk about Bartman. So I didn't even put Bartman in the headline.
Yeah.
Probably cost me a lot of readers. But I felt like it's just unfair to keep putting this guy in there. He has to be part of the story.
Yeah.
But it's not all about – and everyone said it. The guys are like, no, it really didn't affect the people on the field as much as you think. Because as Hollander said, he's like, there's no replays back then.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know what happened.
I wrote about that. The Marlins, especially sitting in there, although they would have had a better look at it than the Cubs would have. That's a strike. That's all they thought. Right.
Ozzy's and they knew people were stirring about, but Ozzy's he's the only one that really saw it.
Yeah.
Because he was at third base.
Third base coach, yeah.
Right. So it wasn't that big of a deal. But everyone's like, oh, no one talks about the error to the error Alex Gonzalez's error. Kyle Farnsworth and Matt Clement wouldn't know that because they don't live here, but everyone talks about that error. But
was it this season on – did you watch The Bear?
FX? I didn't.
There's an entire – what's his name?
It's a monologue, right?
Yeah. I can't think of the actor's name. The big guy. I like him.
I know. I should have used that in my story, but I didn't see it.
He has a whole thing about how Steve Bartman gets blamed for this, but it was all Alex Gonzalez's fault. There's an entire – there's a five-minute monologue about it.
Maybe that's why Alex Gonzalez didn't call me back. Yeah, Oliver Platt. Maybe that's why Alex Gonzalez didn't call me back.
Watched the fucking Bear. Is that what you're calling about? The Bear? No. No, but kind of close. I want to talk about the 03.
But yeah, everyone's like – I like what Karros said. Everyone else is like, oh, no, he's a great shortstop. And Karros is like, he's not the best at getting to balls. Yeah. But if he gets there, usually it's pretty
clean.
He got
there. Karros also wanted to talk to – somebody talked about how – oh, Gonzalez had told somebody about the weird spin on it, right?
Yeah, it was Farnsworth. And he said, I found a quote from him after that game. There wasn't a ton, but there was someone, an out-of-town writer had a quote from him just saying the ball had a weird spin on him.
you know, now you can on Twitter or X or whatever it is, tread lightly when you go on there, but somebody has that ball and then Addison Russell fielding the double play grounder to win the pennant, and they're eerily similar, like their body position, where they are on the field, and it's like, see what could have been. Well, here's what happens when it works. They still would have had to, if they would have been up 3-1, and sweaty Joe Borowski would have had to have gotten the three outs in the ninth. But, you know.
Hendry's like, yeah, we're not here to bury this guy, but I mean, you make that play, we're up 3-0. Yeah.
Well, he's on the team to make that play. I mean, I think he had two walk-offs that year, I think. That's all he did, was he would hit a ninth inning homer, and he would field the ball and strike out every other time. The other thing I remember about him, and I think about every time a player gets, every time there's a player that gets hit by a pitch and the umpires don't believe it, it was in 04. He got hit in the forearm with a pitch, and the ump said it hit the bat. It wasn't anywhere near the bat, and he had to come out of the game. He broke his forearm. He broke his forearm getting hit by a pitch and didn't get to go to first base.
I can't believe he was on the team the next year.
Yeah, he was still there.
How did people not run him out? Like, how was he not run out
well,
of
time? I mean, there's a reason Nomar ended up.
Right. Poor Bartman can't get out of his house, and this guy's fucking still playing every day.
Yeah, he was still there. He didn't finish the season, but he was still there.
No.
He's part of the trade, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he was, right? Was he? No.
He got shipped somewhere. He might have been gone to Montreal and that. I don't remember.
Yeah. You have to look. That's a funny trade to listen to people retell that. Theo's told it to me from his perspective, Hendry from his perspective. Theo just saying, like, Hendry was like, dominating the call, just like, you know, he was the conductor, like, yeah. Okay, you're getting this, yeah. You know, Omar Minaya is complaining about this, or like, you know, it was that's a hell of a trade.
Yeah,
that's a great classic. That's the kind of stuff Jim Hendry woke up in the morning, you know. Yeah. Woke up in the morning feels like that.
Yeah. So, and then I read the Shaughnessy book about Terry Francona because you recommended it. Yeah. And there's that whole thing in there about how the Red Sox clubhouse was just like, Nomar's got to go. Like, we right. just had it with this dude. And this idea, yeah. And I bought into it like everybody else. I can't believe Theo was that ruthless. He would rip the heart of his team out and trade it. And, and you're like, you look back, he's like, no, his team would have been more pissed if Nomar was still there the next day. Like, that decision was not that hard. He was going to take crap in the media for it. But and you look back on it, and the smart move for the Cubs would have simply have been to trade it for Orlando Cabrera, who they were rumored to get forever that summer.
Hendry said, and I didn't put this in there, but Hendry told me that. Yeah, he said we were trying to get Cabrera because there was some extra stuff at the end. We were talking about 04, and he's like, we wanted Cabrera. Right, that would have been no more hit that first season. He just, you know. Just didn't. He wasn't like Theo knew. As it turned out, this young GM named Theo Epstein knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he did. I was wondering, did Bacco talk about kind of a foreshadowing? Because I remember it. There was a game late in a game early in the 03 season where Bacco went to catch a pop foul right next to where the screen ended down by first base, and a fan knocked the ball away from him, trying to catch it. A Cub fan knocked the ball away from him. Cubs didn't end up losing, but I remember being all like, why can't fans keep their hands off the freaking ball? And it was the first thing I thought of with the Bartman thing was did it again. And I wondered if Bacco probably didn't even remember that, but I remember.
I'll have to look in the audio. He might have. He had a pretty good memory. He might have mentioned that. I'd have to go through the audio files I have for all these guys. That'll, I mean, should have been a serial pot. I'm surprised more people. I think Megan Wanamuro did a story, but more people didn't do the 20th anniversary. Everyone did the 10th anniversary. But another reason why I did it, you know, the 10th anniversary, they hadn't won yet. So it was still the same old stuff.
Yep.
This, I think, was a little more, you know, removed from it.
Yeah, it's easier right, to exactly. appreciate the good stuff that happened in 03 now.
Right.
Because the stain is off of it, because we actually finally got to see a team win a pennant and win a World Series. And now you can look back at 03 without the, you know, that's as close as we're going to get crap.
And I liked that when I found out from Clement that, because I knew Pryor was at some game, at a game, but that Wood invited Pryor, and Pryor threw out a pitch for the NLCS, I believe, but, or the NLDS maybe, but the fact that Carey specifically invited Clement and Carey back for the World Series, I thought was a cool.
Yeah.
Cool anecdote, that just so they could all see it together, and like, Harry Wood talking about being on the, talking about being in the parade and on the floats and just kind of, you know, he understood why everyone else was kind of melancholy about it. But the fact that he was the one guy that was still part of the team and part of the organization, yeah, he could at least appreciate it. He's part of the rebuild.
Yeah. Did Mark talk about, have the Cubs ever offered to bring Marcus Giles out and let him run over him between first and second base to try to get even?
No, but he, I mean, that's definitely he thinks was a part of it. You know,
yeah, because the story after he finally retired, they were talking about how a doctor told him that the shoulder, the healed part of his shoulder, they said that's from trauma. That's not from like overuse, although I don't want to let Dusty get off the hook because it was both. And they all immediately thought that was from the Marcus Giles thing. And the fact he stayed in the game after that.
I know.
Like, what the hell are you doing?
That's the, we can blame Dusty for that. That's the trainer's fault.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's
the player's going to want to stay in. The manager's job is to listen to the trainer.
Right. You know, I talked to Pryor, and I was going to use this, but they got bounced so quick from the playoffs. Like, I was saving something for a Pryor story if they, you know, they advanced. And I was like, you know, you're in a different, it's interesting because you are on this different side of it now, right? You were a pitcher during that era. Now you're the pitching coach and you have all this access to all this medical technology and all these, like, you know, different techniques and whatever. And like, what's the difference between when you pitch now when you're a coach? And he's like, you know, yeah, it's a lot different. We got a lot more, but he goes, guess what? Guys are still getting hurt. And he's like, really? Guys still get hurt. Like, it's just a natural thing to throw a baseball. I think it was probably, he was really bitter for, I think, for a long time. And then, you know, there's a story where he just showed up in Dusty's office one day and Dusty sees him and he's got like a full beard and like Dusty, you know, convinced him to get into coaching, like to do something. Cause he was just kind of like, what should I do? You know, and he remember he tried to make a comeback with the Reds. Dusty gave him a chance and he pitched AAA for them and it just didn't work out. And then I think Dusty wanted to coach immediately. And then he took some time and then, you know, went into it, I think with San Diego first, and then it turned into LA. So, you know, he's in a really good place. I think it's, you know, it's pretty cool. He said sometimes his kids will go back and watch, you know, his old videos. Cause it was really, I mean, that was the year that the only year you're going to find that in 04 where you'll find like these Mark Pryor at his best kind of stuff.
Can you imagine what Mark Pryor could have become if they had a pitch lab back then?
I can't even fathom it. Pitch lab.
Would he have ever lost a game? Probably not.
But like this guy, yeah. I will say this. The guys to talk to if you want just funny old baseball stories are Eric Karros, Sean Estes, Bacco, fantastic storyteller. Yes. But Karros is like, you know, an all-time storyteller. Now you got to fact check a few things. Same with Estes's memory is a little shaky sometimes. Estes, I think, is a really like fun. Kerry Wood had a great way to describe him, but like he's just like a quirky, like funny guy. Those guys are all really good. So many of these guys are really good storytellers.
Well, Kerry
Wood, as it turns out, if you ask him about stuff besides his 20 strikeout game, he's got a lot to say. Like, I might be
Bad
the first
would
person
never know what that's like, but you know, the rest of us maybe.
I might be the first person in Chicago to ever interview him at length and not ask him about the time he struck out 20 people.
There's great stuff in there about Estes sitting in his car, pondering his imminent release, and Dusty walks by.
No, it was the opposite. Estes was walking
by. Dusty
by.
Was in his car, and Estes walked by. Yeah.
Yeah, and he heard someone yell his name, Shawnee. And it was, yeah, because earlier that day, it was Hendrick McPhail came and Dusty's office. Like, we got to get rid of this guy. The guy you brought in. He stinks. And Dusty's like, I'll give you one more chance. And he got lit up again. Yeah. And then he's like, then I'm going on paternity leave.
Take your time.
And Dusty's like, take as much time as you need. you're not going to be pitching again. And he watched, what is it? What was his name? Was it Juan Cruz?
Yeah.
He said he watched him. And he said he's hoping he does well, but secretly hoping he gets lit up so he gets to start again. Pitched one game in relief, didn't go that great. And then Dusty gave him that one start in Cincinnati. And it turned out that could have, they might not, if they lose that game, You know, maybe they don't make the playoffs. Now, they also scored like 8 runs.
Yeah.
So that helped. But he did pitch a shutout. The last game he pitched for the Cubs.
And that's mostly what Cub fans remember him for now, is that.
Yeah.
Other than, God, I can't believe we're wasting another start on Sean Estes. But
right. Right. He knew it. And Karras had great stuff to say about living in Chicago and living by the ball. He thinks he was like, he's like, I think I was one of the first guys in the modern era to live by the park again because everyone lived downtown.
Yeah.
You know, and he was the guy that wanted to walk there. And then guys start doing that afterwards. You know what's funny about Chris Bryant, because he's such a goof? He lived by Wrigley's last year before he got traded. And he told somebody, he said, wow, this is great. I didn't know it was so great over here. Like, yeah, genius. Why do you think everyone else lives here? Except when you live in a stupid high rise downtown where it's like you can't walk anywhere.
Yeah.
There's nowhere, you know, like genius. Like, you have the money. Like, do you see how happy everyone else is walking to work or riding their scooter or their, like, I think Javi had like a slingshot.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Javi was supposed to rent my friend's house that last season. Huh? And he backed out the last second.
Nah. Well, yeah, after the Cubs couldn't work out that extension with him, Javi probably couldn't afford
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
Sorry, right, can't, exactly. Can't live there. Yeah. You know, you think about Chris Bryant, and is there like a – I'd like to think there's like a second act, like – okay. I like to think there's like a second act where he gets healthy and the Colorado trades into a real team and then he gets to actually, you know, be productive again, but I don't know that's ever actually going to happen. He just can't stay on the field.
I know. We were laughing about not to make fun of Matt Spiegel because I like Speaks, but he had this tweet. It was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen was when Chris gave like a half a nod to Pete Crow Armstrong at first base. Like, because he made it, and he's like, and Spiegel's like, I would want 10,000 words on the deeper meaning of that nod between these two. Mm-hmm. And we were like, a couple of us were like, someone said, Chris is probably thinking to himself, I wonder what my wife's going to make me and the kids dress up as for Halloween. Think about someone who could care less about deeper meanings than Chris Bryant.
Is Spiegel trying to think it was like some kind of passing of the torch?
Also, like, Armstrong's probably not that good.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's good, but he's not Chris Bryant good. No. Not even close. I mean, it's like an insult to say to compare. It is an insult to compare him to Chris Bryant.
It is.
I know people don't like Chris now or whatever. Chris Bryant was amazing
when
he played. Yep. Great hitter. Yeah, good defensive player. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, I hope he gets some. You know, I hope he learns how to hit somewhere.
I know. Well, hitting a fastball would be good.
And run the base. And how about run the bases? Maybe you can learn that too.
Yeah, I was joking. You know, after he'd been on a few times, that I was hoping the first base coach just remind Pete, it's all left turns. That's all you got to do. Not that hard. Yeah, I mean, how quickly the prospect perverts turn on people, right?
Yeah, right.
Like Chris Bryant is like the epitome of the hyped prospect who gets called up and is somehow better than the hype.
Right.
And has his peak was early in his career, but it was real and it was spectacular. And they win a World Series largely because he's so good. And then injuries start to pile up and he underperforms. And it's like, I never thought he was that good.
Right.
Yes, you. Well, if you didn't, you're wrong because he was. Ugh. Yeah, I don't get it. So how many pieces did you end up writing? You took all at three?
Because
you have some, like, three, overflow. Yeah. You, like, emptied the notebook a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to do one more on Dusty, just on what people think of him. And I'm debating. That's either going to be, does he lose and retire?
Yeah.
Or does he make it to another World Series? So I was kind of collating some of the Dusty quotes I had from guys. Because, you know, especially 20 years later, you're never going to find a guy that played for Dusty that doesn't like him. You know, he'd have to be a real, like, is Dusty the perfect manager? Is he always? No, of course not. No one's perfect. But, like, those guys love Dusty. Yeah. And 20 years later, I think a lot of them really, like, appreciate him even more. Even a guy like Glanville's told these stories and he's put them in his book. But, like, you know, Glanville comes in. He's like, Glanville's like, I didn't really want to be there. Like, people think I, like, wanted to be there because they're winning. He's like, I was playing every day in Texas. It was great. He's like, I'm coming here. I'm not playing. And he was like a pissy guy about it. And Dusty like said you always will respect Dusty for that. And he also told a funny story about being in that – they had to play in Puerto Rico against the Expos. And he's like, he walks into some like club and Dusty's in the middle of the dance floor, like shaking it up. And he's like, usually you leave and you see the manager somewhere. And Dusty's like, don't leave. Let's dance. And I told Estes that story. He's like, that's just like any night you see Dusty. Yeah. He's like, that's not special.
Well, I mean, if Dusty had been born 20 years later, or if Dancing with the Stars was 20 years older, he'd have won it. He wouldn't have finished second like David Ross. Yeah. Dusty would have won Dancing with the Stars.
100%. Yeah. I mean, he just has such a great, like, I don't know. He's just so funny. He's happy when he sees, like, Sully and people like that. That's the, but you, the problem with Dusty and talking about the 03 season, why I didn't get a ton from him, is he just goes to, his mind immediately goes to 2006.
Yeah.
So you might ask him about how great 03 was, and they'll tell you how miserable he was in 06. So, you know, that's just kind of how it is.
And,
so I'll have a Dusty one coming up.
You were saying you can't find anybody that didn't like playing for Dusty. I think there's a segment of player. It would be the young player who was at the back end of the roster who couldn't play because Dusty had to play either Lenny Harris or Tom Goodwin. Got it. We're in the earn it business, kid. Like, well, they've earned a spot on the bench because they haven't been productive for 8 years. How about I get a shot? No, that's not how it works. I got to bring Ramon Martinez over to get some games at short. Why? He's one of my guys. Great. Yeah, I mean, Dusty's legacy is completely different. If they just get to the World, they didn't have to win the World Series. It's funny though. You had a quote in there, and I've heard Kerry talk about it before about how you got Pryor on the mound, you got a 3-run lead, going to the World Series. I'm getting ready for the Yankees, and it's like, at the time, the Red Sox had the lead in that series. This was going to be the matchup of the tortured series. I mean, this was before Grady Little himself in Game 6, and then Aaron Boone. You know, so it's kind of funny to hear him say that. Like, that's clearly a remembering it in hindsight.
100%. Like,
different than what it really was. Because the reality was, the AL series was, I mean, everybody woke up that morning, and the Cubs were going to clinch that night, and then the Red Sox were going to clinch the next night, and we're going to have this dream World Series. I remember as a fan being like, I don't want the Red Sox to get in because I want this all to be about the Cubs. I don't want them to have to split it.
Right.
It ended up, I had to wait 13 more years. So it was my own fault.
Right. Like Estes saying to Jim Henry, like, yeah, I'm glad we lost. We can clinch this at home.
Yeah. And Henry, like,
and there's another one. Zimbrano told me one of the young Latin pitchers, I think there's only one. So, when they were talking before Game 5 to Luis Castillo just on the field, so one of the young pitchers said to him, like, you know, hey, where are you going? You know, when's your plane leave? Like, you know, tomorrow or something. Like, what time are you leaving tomorrow? And he said, and Zimbrano said, like, someone yelled at the kid. Like, you don't say that type of stuff. Now, of course, that's not why they lost. They lost because Josh Beckett threw, like, a two-hitter.
Yes.
Yeah. But.
And then it's funny how everything changed. You know, Doug, the Cubs hit in Game 3. That wild Game 3, they had two pinch hit triples. Doug Glanville and Tom Gooden both had them. That's what Glanville would be remembered for. Instead, you have to be a dork like me to remember that it ever happened. Okay, well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad we got to debrief.
Yeah, we didn't even get into the Bears.
On your research. As the listeners are better for it. There's plenty of time to. We got months to talk about this pending superstardom of Tyson Bagent. We don't need to. Exit here.
I'm waiting for his dad to email me back, the arm wrestling champion.
Are you going to challenge him? Are you going to do like a stunt?
I mean, I'm getting a Mark Carman to do it for Chuggo.
Oh, they absolutely would. Except, you know, the flaw there. They don't have a table. What the hell are they supposed to put their elbows on?
Maybe that could get them to get the table.
Yeah. That's going to be the only thing, I think, that can make it happen.
I'm going to go to the Hawks game this Saturday, so maybe I'll see their Hawks team sitting there crying when they see Connor Bedard on the ice at the end center.
Our and they're savior. All sitting. He's the only I thing keeping the seeping as solvent.
I hope they all sit in the press box like their legs like in shorts, their legs spread.
They're ripping their part of the counter off. Don't eat this.
This is just how we sit now. Guys, you can put the computer on the
Yeah, yeah, they've actually got, they don't, and they have a desk, they don't even have a laptop to travel. They have a desktop computer on their lap and they're trying to type. This is very cumbersome.
You and I are the only two people that think this is funny, but it does crack
me. That's the best. The jokes that amuse me are the ones I enjoy the most. All right. Well, thank you, John.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Many of us have herpes.